20. 5 grains of quinine washed down Sebastian's throat with scalding tea. Heated stones were packed around his body, and half a dozen blankets swaddled him to begin the sweat. The malaria parasite has a 36-hour life cycle, and now, at the crisis, Rosa was attempting to raise his body temperature sufficiently to interrupt the cycle and break the fever. Heat radiated from the bed, filling the single room of the rendezvous as though it were a kitchen. Only Sebastian's head showed from the pile of blankets, and his face was flushed a dusky brick colour. Although sweat spurted from every pore of his skin and ran back in heavy drops to soak his hair and his pillow, yet his teeth rattled together, and he shivered so that the camp bed shook. Rosa sat beside his bed and watched him. Occasionally she leaned forward with a cloth in her hand and wiped the perspiration from his eyes and upper lip. Her expression had softened and become almost broody. One of Sebastian's curls had plastered itself wetly across his forehead, and with her fingertips Rosa combed it back. She repeated the gesture, and then did it again, stroking her fingers through his damp hair, instinctively gentling and soothing him. He opened his eyes, and Rosa snatched her hand away guiltily. His eyes were misty grey, unfocused as a newborn puppy's, and Rosa felt something squirm in her stomach.
"Please, don't stop."
His voice was slurred with the fever, but even so, Rosa was surprised at the timbre and inflection. It was the first time she had heard him speak, and it was not the voice of a ruffian. Hesitating a moment, she glanced at the door of the hut to make sure they were alone before she reached forward to touch his face.
"You are kind, good and kind."
"Shh," she admonished him.
"Thank you. Shh, close your eyes."
His eyes flickered down, and he sighed, a gutsy, broken sound. The crisis came like a big wind and shook him as though he were a tree in its path. His body temperature rocketed, and he tossed and writhed in the camp bed, trying to throw off the weight of blankets upon him, so that Rosa called for Mohammed's wife to help her restrain him. His perspiration soaked through the thin mattress and dripped to form a puddle on the earth floor beneath the bed, and he cried out in the fantasy of his fever. Then, miraculously, the crisis was past, and he slumped into relaxation. He lay still and exhausted, so that only the shallow flutter of his breathing showed there was life in him. Rosa could feel his skin cooling under her hand, and she saw the yellowish tinge with which the fever had coloured it.
"The first time it is always bad."
Mohammed's wife released her grip on the blanket-wrapped legs. "Yes," said Rosa. "Now bring the basin. We must wash him and change his blankets, Nanny." She had worked many times with men who were sick or badly hurt, the servants and the bearers and the gunboys, and, of course, with her father. But now, as Nanny peeled back the blankets and Rosa swabbed Sebastian's unconscious body with the moist cloth, she felt an inexplicable tension within her, a sense of dread mingled with tight excitement. She could feel new blood warming her cheeks, and she leaned forward so that Nanny could not see her face as she worked. The skin of his chest and upper arms was creamy smooth as polished alabaster, where the sun had not stained it. Beneath her fingers, it had an elastic hardness, a rubbery sensuality and warmth that disturbed her. When she realized suddenly that she was no longer wiping with the flannel, but using it to caress the shape of hard muscle beneath the pale skin, she checked herself and made her actions brusque and businesslike. They dried his upper body, and Nanny reached to jerk the blankets down below Sebastian's waist.
"Wait!"
It came out of Rosa as a cry, And Nanny paused with her hand on the bedclothes, as her head held at an angle, quizzical, bird-like. Her wizened old features crinkled in shy amusement. "Wait!" Rosa repeated in confusion. "First, help me get the nightshirt on him." And she snatched up one of Flynn's freshly ironed but threadbare old nightshirts from the chair beside the bed.
"It cannot bite you, little long hair," the old woman teased her gently. "It has no teeth."
"You just stop that kind of talk," snapped Rosa with unnecessary violence. "Help me sit him up." Between them, they lifted Sebastian and slipped the nightshirt down over his head before lowering him to the pillow again.
"And now?" Nanny asked innocently.
For answer, Rosa handed her the flannel and turned to stare fixedly out of the Rondeville window. Behind her, she heard the rustle of blankets and then Nanny's voice.
"How? How?"
The age-old expression of deep admiration, followed by a cackle of delighted laughter, as Nanny saw the back of Rosa's neck turning bright pink with embarrassment. Nanny had smuggled Flynn's cutthroat razor out of the bungalow, and was supervising critically as Rosa stroked it gingerly over Sebastian's soapy cheeks. There was no sound medical reason why a malaria patient should be shaved immediately after emerging from the crisis, but Rosa had advanced the theory that it would make him feel more comfortable, and Nanny had agreed enthusiastically. Both of them were enjoying themselves with all the sober delight of two small girls playing with a doll. Despite Nanny's cautious clucks and sharp hisses of indrawn breath, Rosa succeeded in removing the hair that covered Sebastian's face, like the black pelt of a notter, without inflicting any serious wounds. There was a nick on the chin and another below the left nostril, but neither of these bled more than a drop or two. Rosa rinsed the razor, and then narrowed her eyes thoughtfully as she surveyed her handiwork, and that thing squirmed in her stomach again. "I think," she muttered, "we should move him into the main bungalow. It will be more comfortable."
"I will call the servants to carry him," said Nanny.